listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio, LA's new API dealer. And now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, I want to introduce the guys. Over here to my right, I have Martin Page.
Hi, Mike.
I've got Scott Gershon.
Hello, Mike.
Bob.
So serious.
And we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, hello.
And we're in a good mood. Today we have some very special guests.
Extremely special.
We've got Mike Stitz.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
And we've got the voice of the Audio Nowcast, Andy Jackson.
Live in the studio. Thank you for having me.
Wow. Live in the studio.
There it is again.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. Wait. You're going to have to do it one time.
One more time. Yeah.
How did I do it the first time?
Welcome. No.
You're listening to
like
the
that way.
Be
much
in the
better,
moment. Feel the moment. Yeah.
Like the air.
You're emotional? Yeah.
You got to do it. You're listening to the Audio Nowcast.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast. Oh. With Mike. Isn't he just precious?
Oh. That was the
so
part
precious.
That got edited out. Yeah. The precious part got cut.
Andy Jackson is a DJ on 94.9. KLTY in Dallas, Texas, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
What's the phrase for the...
Safe and fun for the whole family.
Just like the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Safe and fun for part of the family.
So it's great that you guys are here with us today. Before we get going, I just want to go over a few things. Number one, guys, we picked up another nation. We are now in 15 countries across this globe. Mm. We picked up the Republic of Moldova.
And we've been after them for a long time.
Yeah, it's about time.
Again, but does anybody know where the Republic of Moldova is?
Very near Russia, I believe, Mike. So we're reaching out.
It's actually above Romania. I looked that up on Google. So it sounds like a wine, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, they got a reasonably good soccer team. I know that being an Englishman, but I know they exist, which is good news.
Did they beat England?
No, they didn't, unfortunately, but they gave us a good game.
So the people of Moldova, Nuendo or Pro Tools? That's the question.
Yes. Send in that email if you're that one listener. Also, before we get going, we've got a listener question for you, Martin.
Uh-huh.
And why is it all the women ask Martin the questions? But I don't know.
We'll interesting.
Pleased with that. Mm.
But this is from Connie Bosley, and she sent an email. And she
use your female voice.
Yeah. Mike, your normal voice. Go ahead.
We're not going to talk about much tonight, are we?
That's a big edit right there. But she wanted to know, around the time of In the House of Stone and Light, in an old interview, you talked about building a studio in the garage, and she wants to know, what happened to that studio?
Well, first, thank you, Connie, for writing in the email. But that studio still is in operation, and that's the studio with the cement floor. And, in fact, I built a studio next to that in my den, which had a raised floor just to learn Pro Tools. So, in effect, I'm still using the old studio, mainly for all the analog recording and live work. And the new studio, which it was really built... adjacent to the old studio for me to learn Pro Tools, and in fact Mike helped me do that. And I when I started to record in the new room, I realized that the floor was raised and the bass response wasn't very good, so we had to do a lot of soundproofing for that. And I think, Connie, there was a situation in an old interview when I talked about the high beams in my house, and that really wasn't the studio or the garage. That was another room that I used for doing vocals. And I still have that living room that sounds a little bit like a church. But at the moment, I have two rooms stuck together, and they're working out good.
And she also wants to know, when are you getting your website up?
I'm hoping to do that real soon. In fact, I hope, Mike, that you're going to help me do that, because the next album is very imminent, and I'm just mastering that now. So I hope to have the website up before Christmas.
Have you seen the Audio Nowcast website?
I haven't. It's going to be hard to beat that, you know. Hard to beat that.
You sure you want my help?
Actually, that's true.
actually, we're going to be doing a redesign on the website.
I should hope so.
That's
about bloody time.
We're going to be
really?
Listing, because we're not listed on iTunes yet, so we're going to be listing on iTunes.
And yeah,
so,
good.
You know, we figured iTunes.
Well, now we've got Moldova, we've got to move on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Got to get that website up.
That's right. So, Mike here, he has a label, Renaissance Records. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring him on is because, you know, we've done a lot of talking about songwriting, and it seems like everybody wants to have their own studio, and the next thing they want to do is have their own record label. Mike has graciously said that he'd join us and tell us a little bit about having your own record label. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about Renaissance Records and some of the stuff that you do?
Well, let's see. What can I say? First, it's a privilege to be here with you, Mike. So Mike and I have been friends for, what, I guess 25 years or something.
Forever.
So, and we're still buddies. He's a good guy.
Since I was one, because I'm 26.
Yeah. Well, you know, really the record thing has changed so much over the last few years. I mean, and all you guys will attest to that, you know, how in the old days, we were talking earlier, you know, you had to – you know, you did your demos, you pitched them all to all the big labels, and then, you know, you tried to sign a deal, and then, you know, 15 years later, you try to figure out how to make a living because you hadn't recouped yet, you know, and then it was kind of like it was this vicious cycle. So everybody started doing their own independent things a few years ago with the internet opening up and all the other opportunities. And I mean, there's never been a better time to do the quasi small independent label, independent artist thing than now, you know. This is really time to do it. So, I mean, gosh, I mean, if you got any other specific questions.
Why don't
as far
you talk about distribution? You know, well, actually, that is the one of the main things, too, distribution, getting distribution.
One of the things that I wanted to find out is why somebody who runs his own label, what do you offer to artists to come work with you? And why would they want to work with you as opposed to working
Huge advances, probably.
Yeah. Seven-figure advances. Seven-figure advances. Yeah, exactly. They get recouped instantly, you know. So, yeah. That's probably one of the main – no, I guess really it's – because it really is about relationships and whatever you do for a living, you know. It all breaks down to people you feel comfortable with. And, you know, and you say, well, maybe these guys are connected more here in this area or that area. It depends on, you know, what you're trying to do as an artist, too. I mean, if you really feel like the independent route's the way to go, create a product, you know, the best you can, and then, you know, try to sign it, get a distribution deal with someone, and that's a route to go. But if, you know, if there's someone that has done things that you respect or, you know, you enjoy and like their work through the years, and you feel like you could tag team with that, then, you know, then doing the independent label thing can be a good thing. It just has to be a healthy, realistic deal. The old days of cutting the, you know, the deals that like make no sense at all and where the artist just gets taken advantage of through the years. I mean, those days are kind of gone now because you just don't need to. So deals are getting better. Things have to be more fair. And there's plenty of pie to go around, you know, instead of being everybody – it being so lopsided. You know?
Well, I think one of the advantages, especially with your label, is what you bring to the table, you and your brother, who happens to be a really fantastic songwriter and guitar player. I mean, when they come to Renaissance Records, you can work with a team. And I think more and more, that's you got to have to stand out from the pack by being able to do things like that. How important is it to have that, you know, your brother to work with you?
Oh, it's incredible. It's a great blessing. It really is, you know. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, especially nowadays with, you know, a few years ago, you know, you had, sometimes it took millions of dollars to really put a room together that, you know, to pull something off that the public would really sink their teeth into. And now, you know, almost everybody has a studio in their house or their apartment or condo. And it's like you buy some of these big top Billboard records and they were, you know, done in a guy's, you know, with a $100 microphone and an old 909 drum machine. You know?
Oh, look how we're doing the podcast.
Yeah.
And a cassette recorder in a bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. I mean, find the right team. It's because it's about somebody, you know, because we were artists on Word Records back in the early 90s. And you got to find a team that believes in what you're about and what you're trying to do. That's the whole thing. Because, you know, labels will sign a gazillion action, throw them out, and see what sticks on the wall. And if something explodes, because the artist worked their tail off, then all of a sudden they get behind it. Yeah, look this great thing we did. But if you're gonna work hard regardless. So why not find a group of people that really believe in what you're doing? You know, that's what's
here.
Key.
Here, yeah.
Well, I did notice too that, you know, whenever you would tell me stories, it seemed like you really had a genuine care for the artist. I mean, you developed a relationship that was more than just you know, a business relationship. It was a personal relationship.
I mean, to me, that's you know, the personal relationships are way more important because the business side obviously is important. But if, you know, if there's a really – becomes a friendship and a bond, then you got something you can work with and build on because – There's such a great chasm and divide between artists and the label. It's like you got the executives, you know, driving around the dark tinted window cars who never have contact with the artist.
Like Mike.
Yeah, exactly. Like Mike in the podcast, exactly. So, I mean, this is actually, everybody, the first time I've ever seen Mike in person. So, yeah. I've known him for 25 years. So, yeah. You know, he finally took the dark sunglasses off and we're going to finally get to know the real him.
I've never seen him drive up. You know, I think he's just delivered here by a crew of people.
See, this is why you don't do podcasts with friends.
That's right. Well, you know, one of the cool things about having going with somebody like Renaissance is that now it's like one-stop shopping almost. They can help you write, produce, and they can do your website for you. Now, with technology, you can market yourself all over the world through website, and they actually design websites as well now. So it's like you can come and do
this
everything
is, this
there.
This is where everything is going. I mean, we're going to have HGTV on our cell phones here in in a few days. Yeah. So, I mean, you've got to really think outside the box and start thinking a lot more progressively than the old school way of just how things were done, whether that's contractually, legally, and and relationship wise, especially. You know, when you have an artist that actually enjoys calling the people who they work with and look forward to it instead of like dreading it, then you got something you can really really work with.
Is there a special genre of music that that the record label leans towards?
Well, I mean, we mostly do contemporary Christian music, which is something that's kind of grown over the last 20 or 25 years or so, especially. But we've worked with all kinds of people through the years, and it's funny because you get artists who what's the best way to put this? Sort of forget quickly forget when all of a sudden a little bit of notoriety or something positive happens. All of a sudden it's like, dancing with the one that brung you goes out the window pretty quick. Right. So I think having those relationships makes a big difference, to get to know who they are, so.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your studio, a little bit about your recording setup, since this is the Audio Nowcast.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, we have a couple I guess everybody does, a couple pretty full-blown Pro Tool setups and all kinds of fun outboard gear and mics and all kinds of good toys. I tell you, Pete, if we're going to talk much about gear.
No, but, we talk gear here.
Yeah,
gear is allowed.
Yeah, a new ADD converter that just killed me was the new Benchmark ADC1.
Except that gear.
Yeah, exactly. Great piece. But yeah, no, so we have all kinds of fun toys and,
great microphone.
Yeah, good microphone. I mean, obviously that's the key, just getting the foundation of
it. What kind of mics do you have?
All kinds of stuff. I mean, probably my favorite vocal mic, we've tried everything through the years, the Sony C800G, I still haven't heard anybody that I didn't, male and female, that didn't sound good on that. It sounds amazing.
So. Rob, what's your favorite vocal mic?
Actually, the C800G is one of them. But it depends. For our purposes, it always depends on the singer. We don't have any one particular favorite.
Martin?
I think it's, a bit like Rob says, because I record myself a great deal, so you find the microphone that sounds best on you. But I've got a nice Neumann 87 and a C12, which
I was going to say
nice.
C12 and 87 if you had to
And
pick.
I just got a Neumann 49, which was, I enjoy a lot on guitars. I enjoy that.
And a lot of my friends, including Mr. Gershon here, have used the Sound Deluxe mics a lot, and I'm getting ready to check those out.
I was just going to plug that.
I'm sure you were. Well, that's
where I was going next, Scott. I was going to ask you.
I do love the Sound Deluxe mics, not because I'm with Sound Deluxe, but David Box is a mic guru, and when we first met him, he would look at all our mics that we had, all the Neumanns and stuff, and he'd go, I can make those better. And he did. And as he went through the different mics, we kept saying, have you ever thought of building them? He's like, yes. And one of the things that David's doing, which is pretty amazing, he's taking all of the classics, the 251, the 47, and remaking them as good, if not a little better. Because he still wants to keep the character, but some of the idiosyncrasies that would happen with the mics that were not favorable, he would fix. Mm-hmm. Like a 251 that goes all the way down, full range. And the mics he has, I mean, they're not cheap. But
no, they're not. They're
and you
but
know what?
They're
normally,
amazing mics.
It scares me normally if somebody says, we're going to take something that's classic and perfect and make it better. I mean, normally that's a scary thing. I've heard with the Sound Deluxe stuff.
It's not even classic. It's really not even like we're going to remake what you can get. We're going to remake what you can't get anymore.
Yeah, because it's discontinued stuff.
You just can't get them. Or, all the caps are dried out or, they're just blown up. So that's what... it's a boutique little company. I mean, we're not sitting there going, we're not Rode, just blowing them out. But hey, they make good mics too. So
sorry about that little sidetrack, but it just got me thinking about microphones.
Yeah, there's lots of
we do that.
It's amazing all the stuff coming out of China. I mean, stuff. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon they're going to be like $8. They're going to sound
amazing.
The one we've been using a lot, SE, but also the MXL. We did an MXL 990. It's the 980, against an 87. And I got to tell you.
Oh, Don't say it.
It's $50. $50, the $9.90. It's a little different. Mm-hmm. Not a lot different.
Right.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, so what we, because we're kind of demented and we use mics in a very different way than anybody else.
Right.
Like next week I've got a gun shoot where we're going to be recording bullet buys and bullet ricos. And, you know, something about taking Sheps and Thiele 170s and all those kind of mics that are about 3,000 bucks a pop, sticking them in the line of fire and going, oh, we just lost one. Sorry.
Right.
So we go, hey, we know something that sounds just as good as an 87. It's about 50 bucks. Right. So we'll buy, you know, half a dozen of them. We'll put them out there and we'll start shooting at them.
Yeah. Have you ever hit the mic?
Yes. And we've taken out more Thiele 170s. Oh, we've taken out Neumann. Oh, it's we've blown out mics.
Do you have a mic on the wall? Like,
you know, I actually have a mic which is going to send to
my graveyard.
I actually have a Crown PZM, and what I did was we were recording fire for this one show, and we had these giant fire launchers. They were shooting these giant gas flames, and I wanted it close to hear the big fire gust, whatever. And so what I did was I figured I used the boundary of the ground as the mic, and I put two of them on each side, and they worked all day long. So I said, my God, this is great. The PZMs is fine. Oh, they worked so well. Then we went to dig them back up, you know, because they were, like, slightly in the dirt. They were totally melted and transformed, and they didn't look like anything from this earth. I mean, I took a picture and sent it to Crown and went, it still works.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Amazing.
Anyway.
That's great.
Well, one other thing I wanted to want you to talk about, Mike, is
I'm tired of talking, Mike, just between you and me.
Let's talk about Upwork here.
Yeah. My contract to do this said it's like 11 and a half minutes, and I get a back rub and I'm out of here.
One thing I want to talk to you about, Mike.
Yeah. Yes, Mike.
No, but you turned me on to one plugin, and I wanted you to talk about your love of BFD, you know, because and you do some really great things with that plugin, and I just tell me why you like it so much.
I tell you what, I mean, because, you know, playing drums and having done that for a lot of years, I mean, it's just somebody finally sat down as far as, you know, programming world and said, okay, how do we make something to where a non-drummer or someone who, you know, actually doesn't play can actually pull off real sounding stuff? And that plugin is just insane. So I don't know where things are, or that stuff's going in the next 5 or 10 years, but I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, sonically, the, you know, some of the samples are 40, 80, 90 layers deep. And I mean, the nuances and being able to make it as, you know, quantized or as loose as you want, it's just incredible. It sounds, and the sounds are phenomenal, you know. So I highly recommend it to anyone who hasn't heard it. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a processor monster. So
it'll eat your system alive.
Yeah, yeah,
and
it will.
If you try to load the largest version of their newest sound sets, you better have a really fast.
Yeah,
computer.
You need a lot of RAM and a lot of quadruple processing going chunk all day. So.
Have you used it, Rob?
I'm now going to invest
I've
more
used
in
it a
Apple.
Ton. I've used it a ton. Yeah.
You like the VFD?
I like BFD and I like DFH. Those two.
Those are both good.
Are both really, really good.
I haven't heard DFH.
It sounds great.
It doesn't?
Similar kind of idea. I mean, different user interface, but the end result is very realistic sounding drums.
Yeah.
The thing about BFD, that's that plugin I was showing you too, about the way you can, you know, change the mic position and you can do the mixing and the reverb. That's just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great. Great plugin.
So let's get back to your label. As a small label, what's one of your biggest fears, you know, when you're working with an artist? Do you ever have other labels?
Signing artists, that's probably the biggest fear. I'm just teasing. But, everything's fine at a record company until there's artists involved at that point. So, and then from that point, it all goes crazy. So, no, because, you know, like anybody, in any business, you deal with people that all of a sudden, you know, success starts coming, whatever, and whether it's a small scale or large scale, and all of a sudden selective memory starts coming in, and, you know, but it's, you know, it has its challenges like anything else. But, you know, as long as you build a firm foundation, I mean, it's like a marriage, you know. My wife and I just had our 5th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. They say if you can make it after 5 years, then you've got something.
Mm-hmm. We're best friends, so we have a great time, so. But it's the same kind of thing, you know. It is. It gets back to, you know, knowing people. And because, like, when you're an artist, you just get stuck in a label, and then you kind of go. I remember the first time we went in to meet with the marketing thing. It was back in early 90s when we were doing the word thing. And I remember we were so excited. We were kind of young and naive, thinking, okay, this is it. You know, we're on a larger label, and we're just, oh, boy, this is going to be wonderful. You know, and there were some great people there. But I remember sitting down with our marketing guy, who was sort of in charge. And, of course, people change every other day. It's a whole new staff of people.
But I remember sitting down and going, okay, like just expecting all these nuggets of truth and to learn all this great wisdom and everything and, you know, how they sell millions of albums and all this stuff. And so we said, okay, what are you guys thinking? You know, what's the marketing plan for this record? And they're like, what do you guys want to do? And we're like, well, what do you guys have planned? What do you want to do? And he goes, well, what do you guys want to do? And we're like, well, what do you want to do? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, like, and that's when my brother and I both looked at each other and said, okay, I now understand how this happens. They throw it out there, and if the artist works really hard, then it comes together, and then they go, hey, look what we did. You know, it's great. So, yeah. So
that's the truth, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. But all that kind of stuff is changing, too, now. So, between MySpace taking over the planet and all the other outlets now, you know, you don't have to do the major thing anymore. So, but you got to get back, which, you know, Martin, obviously you having written some amazing songs, it gets back to the song. That is the thing that I think so many record companies forget about. They spend, whether it's $1 gazillion, to create this sonic masterpiece, but if the songs aren't there, the public doesn't care if the 10K on your hi-hat is like the most beautiful thing you've ever heard, okay? But if the song sticks in your head...
Our public cares.
Well, no, yeah, this, yeah. Yeah, Moldovia, they're all about the hat, okay?
And 10K in particular.
Yes, exactly. Do not pan it too far to the right either. It's got to be almost up the middle, so we need the energy in the middle. But and it gets back to the song. I mean, that's the one thing I think that record companies, you know, obviously they're in the business to sell product and whatnot, but, man, if the songs are there, I mean, you know, there's several large things that are out right now that are just blowing up that are incredibly simply done and, you know, mm-hmm. almost on the point
well,
of...
Well, it's a very good point, isn't it, Mike, about Johnny Cash, you know, being number one, you know, after all his career. I know, you know, we get a lot of sympathy votes for that, the record going number one, but really it's a very simple, straight-ahead mm-hmm. record. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I think a lot of people, you know, related to that, saying, you know, we're cutting out everything out the way and we're getting to the heart of something.
Yeah, and you know, when you find people... You know, driving in the car and humming the song, well, that's what sticks with them. You know, it isn't the – I mean, obviously the great huge production stuff is wonderful too, but you got to have – that's the foundation. You know, you got to – obviously the relationship with the artist and the label, which can also help to inspire better songwriting. But I think that's the key that gets left behind so much of the time. They just think, get a really cool slick cover and a lot of airbrushing if they've got any pimples and then, you know, get it out there and see how it sells, you know. So instead of focusing on the songs, you know.
I can't tell you how many times I've bought a record because of the cover art, though.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I hate it when that happens, too.
Uh-huh. So you do that, Mike.
Oh, my gosh.
Mike used to turn around my house and say, I bought these four albums because I just love the artwork. And then he'd play them to me. And
I remember Mike's walls being covered with Duran Duran posters when he was young.
Well,
so.
Some of his rooms still are. Yeah.
Not true. how do you find your artists? For your label, do you?
Yeah, I mean, stuff gets submitted, and just, you know, a friend will call and say, "Hey, check this out," and you know, the normal, you know. But I mean, obviously, the internet's becoming a huge, you know, everybody's like, you know, go check out my MySpace thing. You know, tell me what you think. Kind of, you know, so there's the ways to reach people are, you know, growing daily. It's exponential. So, but yeah, it's some of the traditional routes, but then just, you know, meeting people and friends calling, saying, "Check it out." You know.
Now, what kind of advice would you give somebody who wants to submit to a label, not necessarily your label, but to any label? I mean, is there definitely some do's and don'ts?
And how do you deal with unsolicited material if stuff is just showing up?
Well, you know, we try to be honest. I mean, it's like that's one thing, you know, having been dealt with labels and people and stuff in the past that aren't necessarily totally honest. I mean, it's like if you tell someone, hey, I'll check it out, listen to it, then we really will. And we learned a hard lesson. Well, it was hard for a friend of ours. We had a friend of ours who was a dear guy, great guy, but probably one of the worst singers I've ever heard in my entire life. And he had a great job. This is probably back around 1990, you know, doing very, very well financially. And he came to us and said, I'm going to quit my job and go into music full time, you know. And we'd always – you try to sugarcoat and encourage friends and stuff. But my brother and I looked at each other and said, man, we got to say, dude, you know, when you realize that when you sing and people are laughing, they're laughing at you, not with you, you know, because he just thought he was funny. And so we sat him down and we shared that with him and said, you know, dude, we just really feel like this is really not, I mean, you know, you can't sing, you know. I mean, Bob Dylan is like opera compared to what you do, you know. and so he just sat there, okay, all right, yeah. And then he quit his job and went into music full time. That was 1990. We've never heard from him again. So
they took your advice.
Yeah, So yeah, it did
huge.
Really well.
Huge. Jim Moldova, big name over there.
Yeah, it's really big over there. But you know, at least we were honest with him, and so You know, but yeah, I mean, as far as submitting, obviously, you know, put the best demo you can together, obviously, is totally crucial. You know, and get the best. I mean, run the songs by somebody. I mean, because labels understand. Look, you know, you don't have to explain. Well, I only had this keyboard and my guitar had four strings and the neck was warped, and it's like, put the best stuff you can together with the song. Get the songs as strong as you possibly can, because they understand if they put money behind it, you know, and record it well, it'll sound great. So,
wow. Hey, Rob, you ever considered starting a label? With all your
I have considered it, because I've done a bunch of artist development, and I still consider it, and I'll probably consider it for a long time. I don't know if I'll ever do it, but I do think about it.
To me, it just seems like just a tremendous amount of responsibility, and then also you almost have to be like a father figure to your artists out there.
And that happens, yes.
But at the same time, what's like?
There's a lot of snuggle time going on. Yes,
there is.
But do you have, you know, as much as you've probably had some, you know, things that you regret? I mean, I'm sure there's been some really great where you've seen a project just kind of take off that you just babied and loved. And
yeah, I mean, there's that too. But I guess, you know, the rewarding thing for me is just I would like to leave, you know, if I passed away tomorrow, a legacy of just that I, you know, love people and had a great relationship. Because, you know, music is great and everything, but it's not the end all. You know, it's like, it's friendships and relationships and how you treat people in business too. No matter what, whether you sell real estate or in the, you know, recording industry in some way or another, and, you know, video or film or something. So, but yeah, I mean, we've had lots of stuff that's, you know, it turns out to be a blast, and you deal with a few knuckleheads every now and then. So, you know, but
actually,
one of the reasons
I haven't done an independent label is because I enjoy the creative process so much and producing and writing and all that stuff, and I just worry that it would pull me away from that.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything was going smoothly, that would be fine, but when the knuckleheads enter the picture,
right,
and you have to deal with the knuckleheads, you know, and you're pulled that
right
far from the creative process, I just
no,
don't
you're
know
right
that I have that.
Yeah. We always call it the Ronnie Rockstar syndrome, you know, mm-hmm, when they go from being completely normal to being Ronnie Rockstar all of a sudden. Dark sunglasses indoors, you know you're in trouble when they come in, and it's inside and the dark sunglasses are on. So.
Generally, if you check back in a few years, they're back to normal.
Yes, yeah.
funny how that works.
After they've been flipping hamburgers.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny how Subway will fix that.
You know the line, be nice to people on the way up, because you'll see them on the way down.
That's right.
So what you do is you open up a record label and a Subway.
Exactly.
Subway.
A record label that gives free sandwiches with every CD you buy. So, yeah.
Hey, Martin, have you ever considered starting a label? Or?
You know, not really. What Rob was saying there, I'm so in love with the creative side of it. But by releasing my next album, which is going to be independent, you actually feel like you're your own label, and in effect you are, you know. And,
well, you're doing a lot of what a label would have done.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, on a small scale, I feel it's quite exciting because I'm doing what everybody is talking about now. You know, I moved away from a major label and took some time to concentrate on putting my own thing out, and also with the internet arriving and... it feels good and exciting. It's a new way of going because I've been with labels for a very, very long time. But, you know, this you feel like you're your own label because you're recording it. It's your own studio. You're going to master it yourself. You're going to distribute yourself. You're going to find out how to get into different places, you know, to get it out onto the internet. And so in a way, I feel like this is a first time, and I feel like I've got a label.
If it's not successful, you can't blame it on an intern that
exactly
really had no idea what they were doing.
I will
doing,
blame it on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's Mike's fault. So, yeah. Plus, too, I mean, financially especially, you know, obviously you having, you know, done the large label thing, it's like, you know, instead of going in for a meeting and they go, well, you're still, you know, you know, you've sold 300,000 or 400,000 albums.
Yeah.
You're like, well, you're still eight more zeros on the end of that from recouping. You know, as opposed to you go sell 30,000 or 40,000 units independently, and it's a tremendous success.
This is, if your mentality is in the right place, in the sense that, you know, I'm seeing this as a labor of love at this point, and you would like to sell a few, but you're doing it on your own terms, and you feel like, well, I'm not expecting the world back, but I'm also going to be able to get out some of the creativity that I never would be able to get out, maybe with a major label, because you're A&R-ing it yourself, and you're saying, hey, I care about these songs, and you haven't got a major label saying, not happy about that song, not happy about this, you know, are you going to tour, are you going to do this, you know, and so in a way it's a beautiful thing that I think with the event of internet, people get a chance to care about their own items very specially and not have to deal with a multitude of people. Of course, you're going to get a lot of bad stuff coming out, but at the same time... we're not dealing with A&R departments, which are making creative decisions for us. Mm-hmm. And that can also funnel out some great artists. You know, we would have difficulty sometimes in hearing Joni Mitchell these days because they wouldn't get a chance to get through. But I think now, I think people love to go onto the internet and to find these new artists themselves. And they quite like it, that it's small, it's independent, and it's coming from a passionate place. And I think that's very intriguing, especially to young audiences, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like the small label is becoming a badge of honor.
And that's
where you want to go. You want to go with the small label because there's a tremendous amount of understanding in the marketing and I think
the consumers think that they might be hearing something true, you know, like hearing an early Bob Dylan record, you know, Blood on the Tracks. They're going to think that they're going to get something like that.
You get a lot more phone calls from friends going, hey, have you heard that?
Sure.
No. The other day, someone I was on the phone, she goes, have you heard of this band out of San Diego? I was like, she goes, go check out their MySpace, you know.
Yeah.
So you're going to get tons of it. Yeah, because you can be creative now, you know, where so much of that was lost, you know, whether it was through the hair bands.
Almost the doors were shut down. You know, you had to take what was there. Now you can go into the swimming pool and look for a lot of things, and I think that makes the artist feel like he's involved much more. Yeah, I mean, the consumer's involved much more. The listener is.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, hey, thanks, Mike, for filling us in on some of
your experience. Yeah, I have absolutely nothing else to say at this point. So.
You did do more than 11 minutes.
Yeah,
right.
I know.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Andy about radio and all things radio. So we'll see you on the other side.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And what we're going to talk about right now is we're going to be talking about radio. Because we've got Andy Jackson here. And Andy, why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about how you ended up being the DJ that you are today.
Okay, well, when I was a wee little 17, actually, I was a freshman in college. I was 17, and I thought, you know, I want to write songs for a living. I just think that's really cool. I want to do that. So in college, I needed extra money to put myself through college, and I thought, man, what a great way to learn how to write hit songs, but work at a radio station and listen to these songs for 5 hours at a time. So I thought this would be a good match to study them. And, well, anyway, so I got into radio. I contacted a local radio station in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, outside of Knoxville, which happened to be Dolly Parton's radio station.
Pigeon Forge?
And yes, at Dollywood. Maybe you've heard of it. Dolly Parton has an amusement park there, and I lived in the area, and my college was near there, and I called, and I said, hey, you know, I'm taking this radio class in college, and I'd love to volunteer my time, and lo and behold, they hired me to start board hopping, and I begged them to put me on the radio. Let me just try midnight to 6 a.m., you know, the graveyard shift, and sure enough, they did, and I've been doing it ever since, and through that, I found out that, you know, I didn't really want to write hit songs, that I wanted to be really good in radio, so I've been doing it now for 15 years, and I wound up in Dallas, Texas, which is a great market for radio. It's a top five market and a huge blessing, and I love being there. And it's just a passion that I have, and it's fun. I love music, and I know that I'm not good at writing songs, so I'm good
at singing.
Or singing songs. I can't sing either. Thought once I'd be a songwriter and singer, but that didn't last long.
First hit was going to be Pitch is Not a Priority.
That's right. Pitch is not a priority. And you always prayed that, you know, you would find a woman that didn't want to be a singer.
That is a true story. I always prayed. Yes. I don't want to marry a woman who wants to sing.
And I do not want to sing.
I got a double blessing. So.
Double. So I can take it. I can take it. I know I can't sing. But I've been doing radio for 15 years now, and I'm very excited to still be in it. And it's an awesome industry, and it's just always come natural for me, so it's fun.
Do you remember the first time that you were live on the air?
Yes.
What was that like?
Very scary. Well, they always would tell you, my boss would say, you know, put up a picture of a family member or something and look at it and pretend you're talking to that one particular person. So that always helped. But it was very
nerve-wracking. Even if you hated them?
Even if you hated them, yeah, you'd get that angry sound with that country music, you know. But I Will Always Love You by Dolly Parton, you know. But it's a great industry to be in. It's definitely changing now, obviously, with technology and you know, if you, I could take you back a few years ago, it was more than a few, but when they, the FCC and the deregulation happened with the bigger companies, what happened was when they came in and said, hey, you can own as many radio stations as you want in these bigger cities or in any city for that fact, these large companies came in and basically did cookie cutter radio. They would have a country station, rock, Christian, gospel, rap, it, all in the same building, but just across the hall from one another. And the same program director would be programming all five of those stations, which took the competition out of it because now the same company that's fighting for those advertising dollars, they own all the stations. So that radio station didn't particularly have to perform as well and be competitive. So that's why the staleness of radio has gotten to where it is today. But on the good timing of technology and iPods and the internet, where you, Mike, now can program your own radio station.
Yeah, we can.
Basically, you don't have to listen to radio anymore. You can, and in the morning, you can download a podcast from Howard Stern if you wanted and listen to yesterday's podcast on your way home from work. So it's a really interesting time right now in radio. So for myself as an on-air personality, it's very challenging. I'm going to have to really step up my game to become more of a personality because that's only what's going to bring people back now.
Well, yeah. So as a radio station, when you broadcast, obviously over the airways, do you guys also do an internet link as well?
Yes. Anytime we all have streaming audio, most radio stations have streaming audio, and radio stations are now trying to become more interactive on the air to say, hey, check out our website to find our playlist there, or you can register to win this here on our website. So radio stations are trying to push that more now as well to become an interactive thing like a blog. Like Andy Jackson's blog from the night, where you would actually go to KLTY.com and read what I wanted to talk about or whatever it is, but also listen on the radio too. So it has to become more interactive.
How do you see satellite radio affecting you at all?
Well, I think that everybody's asking that question because I don't know how it's going to affect us. In a sense, it will. I think that it gives people more choices, but the only thing with technology is that you really take relationships away from that, and that's how radio is going to survive. I think that's how local radio will survive, is only to have the local relationship that you may not have with satellite radio. If you're on your way home from work and you want to hear what's going on in LA, you may not hear that on a satellite radio station, but you would hear it on your local radio station. I think that's the only thing that's going to save us, is that people do want that, hey, neighbor next door conversation going on the way home, instead of just listening to a satellite radio station that may not have that same feel. And it all comes down to relationships again, just like we talked about, the personal touch again. And what happened was when that deregulation happened, when these larger companies came in, they were voice tracking as well. Voice tracking meaning that the on-air personality wasn't even there. They would just go through the script of the day and the songs, and they would just say, hey, you know, coming up is whatever, Michael Jackson, okay? But because they weren't live, they weren't in tune what was going on in that town. But it really, it made it so cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. And so people start missing that relationship of, you know, when I come on the radio, I share about my day. Maybe if Mike and I were cooking dinner and something funny happened, I'm able to share about that. And that's what people really want to hear about, that we're human, that we're their friend, and I can talk to them like that on the radio. But that truly is the only thing that's going to save it, is the relationship aspect and localness.
When you first started on radio, did you were you able to choose the songs you wanted to play?
No. Mm-mm.
So that's because that's what I always, well, maybe I'm just a little bit older, but
yeah.
I always liked it where each DJ kind of had the personalities of things they wanted to play, mm-hmm. whether it was old, whether it was new. And what they did was you actually went. I remember this guy named Toad from Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember everyone loved it because it was, he would play just really esoteric things at that time. And everyone just loved listening to the stuff that he was choosing. He'd go, oh, I don't want that album. Let's try this album. Or I heard a new album. Or, and it was great because that was the personality of the DJ.
I think that's going to come back. When these larger companies came in and bought up everything and were able to put these radio stations, own five stations in one market, they are not now competing against each other because the company owns all of them.
Yeah, like so, Channel.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, not naming names, but I'm going to let you say it. But the companies would do that. So I think that we are on the way back to what you just mentioned. It is going to come back to the personality going with the groove of the evening or the day to say, oh, you know, I'm getting a lot of phoners on this one. I really need to play this song right now because it's just out there, you know.
Like and turning on a friend instead of just another
radio station. That I think it is going to come back to that, and that's what radio is going to have to become again, is the personalized friendship bond that you had with that particular radio host that you just loved listening to him because he felt what you were feeling. And but when those big companies came in, they just sterilized it so much to give you a playlist, and we don't want that same song to play at the same time every night or every day. We got to have some mix here, you know. So
one of the things that I found interesting, not being originally from L.A., was that the L.A. radio stations I find incredibly boring, and the fact that it's pretty much the top 40 of every type of genre.
Right.
But then I went to Seattle, and I'm hearing stuff from Asia. I'm hearing really outside-the-box music on some stations. Other than NPR in L.A., it just doesn't exist. And you think, with L.A. being, quote-unquote, the entertainment mecca of the U.S., that the talent pool that's in this town, it's all one kind of ilk. I mean, it's all like whatever the top 10 popular of something is, they play it again and again and again.
Obviously, the consultants come in and say research shows that this particular female, like for instance, our radio station targets a woman 25 to 54 that has three children. So the
does Martin.
Yeah, I've been doing that for a long time.
Martin's good at doing that. Those songs that you write are very good. Yes, but so we look at that female and say, okay, she probably listens 2 hours out of the day. And we got to catch her because she wants to hear familiar songs. And the research shows that people want to hear something that they're familiar with to come back to radio. And that's what we do is we sell advertising. And we are promising our advertisers that, hey, we're going to reach that woman several times a day. But the only way that we can do that is if she tunes in and she can sing along with the song. That's why it's so hard to break new artists, especially in the Christian music industry. It's a little different from the secular genre of things. It's a little bit harder to break because it is a lot smaller, and people are just wanting to hear what they're familiar with. And that's what the research shows, that if they're familiar with the song, then that gives us more time spent listening that we can now take to the advertiser and say, hey, look, I've got the female all week long for this many hours. You're going to reach her if you spend money with us. So,
and, you know, and the public doesn't realize, too, that radio is, you know, the music is filler for the commercials.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
The public thinks
it is all about the advertising dollars.
Yeah, it's the bottom line.
Same thing with TV. Yeah.
So the so the radio programmer actually is – he just interprets what the researchers say.
Absolutely. Yeah. We do focus groups, and we play snippets of songs like, for instance, like, for example, Martin's music I know is still being played because King of Wishful Thinking, it tests so well. It's at the top. I mean, so people are so familiar with it that they want to keep hearing it. And so it's going to continue to test well, and it will continue to be played because it's testing well, because that's what a mom wants to hear.
So if Martin sings it right now,
all of a sudden,
a demo of the
Audio Nowcast.
But I was just out of lunch today, and the topic of it was, you know, the future of a job for myself as an on-air personality is that I really have to become a greater communicator and a better friend to people on the radio and build on relationships even more and become better. Because if I'm just a liner jock, they call me, I just read what my PD puts in front of me and I don't personalize it, then I will not have a job because the talent is going to become better at what they do because they're going to have to compete with iPod and the internet. You got to get the ratings to people to come back.
Well, all I know is that you're perhaps the best voice that we've had on.
Totally agree.
So does that mean do you think the talk radio is going to be where a lot of everything is going?
Absolutely. I think that talk radio outperformed a lot of FM stations. And if you'll notice, a lot of talk radio is on AM. But really, they are seeing now, because people are staying a lot longer with talk stations, that I think they will now start putting them on FM signals, giving them that stronger signal to sell more advertising dollars, and they will actually outsell music stations. I think that's where it's headed.
Well,
I was going to say, that's what I listen to. When I listen to the radio,
it's the only thing you can listen to. I mean, a lot of times I've actually gone the other way, where because I'm always commuting to work, and sometimes I have to say I have to commute 2 hours.
Wow.
So, you know, radio goes on, and all I'm hearing are shock jocks.
Right.
And it's just the same old stuff, and it's and nothing against it. I'm just getting tired of it. And it's just, you know, sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's kind of cool. So what I find, I put my iPod on, and I'm now listening back to music.
Right, right. Because they're talking so much. Yeah.
Well, they're talking about so, and they're not saying anything.
Right.
I mean, it's more like who slept with so and so, and
then
and what words can we use to totally blow your mind?
Right. Yes. It is the way it is.
Yeah.
There's no creativity.
There is no creativity, and for on-air personalities, they're under so much pressure to perform, especially in a larger market like Los Angeles. I mean, it's so competitive. If you don't get those ratings, then you're not going to have a job. But they think that that's what gets the ratings. And people really want to hear music and even talk. I mean, Mike and I listen to talk radio. I don't even listen to radio stations when I'm not at work. So, because, you know, at least in talk radio, there's some personality. You got phoners coming in, people calling in. You don't know what they're going to say. That's a bit entertaining because who knows what they're going to say, you know. It's not planned. So it's definitely an interesting time right now. So it's an exciting time, but it's also a little scary because I think it will make radio better. I think it'll make your local radio better. You know, Clear Channel just has done their HD channels now in Los Angeles, so that's going to give you even more variety. You're going to be able to tune into 98.7 HD and 98.7. So there's going to be two signals on the same number. And so you're going to have more variety now, and that's where it's headed to, is the HD signal in radio. It's just going to give you more variety.
Is the HD signal, is it a better signal? Is
it will be clearer, but right now not everyone has them in their car. Right.
So you need a special HD radio.
You will have to have a special HD radio
now,
to get
How is that different than satellite radio?
It's free.
Well, it's
free. The other
thing about satellite radio is
paying for radio just has always – it's just – I don't know. It's like I can have 8 gazillion songs on my iPod, so why do I want to pay for – you know? I mean,
it's very interesting when you
– But it's the same reason with cable. Why did you buy all of a sudden, hey, there were 4 TV stations, you know – You got to see everything.
But if
you
go on iTunes and you find an album that you like, you'll see a playlist of about which is done by normal people that have got a playlist. I mean, I was just looking at you know, my album House of Stone and Light was on iTunes, and then it had 4 other albums next to it. And I thought, oh, well, my song has been on some compilations. Well, these are compilations made by the iPod people, and they even put a little insignia what it is, best music of the 90s. And there's like 200 songs on there, and you're really listening to a great selection done by Joe Smith somewhere in Detroit. And so here I was thinking it was an album compilation. Well, it really is, but it's done by the normal person. And I mean, that's what radio has to fight with. Everybody can do it themselves, you know.
The thing I don't like about XM radio is I'm actually canceling my XM radio because I hear that compression and it just sometimes I just can't get past it. It's just like I can do better compression on my iPod and it doesn't sound thin and it just sounds a little better, and I can program my own radio station. I can program my own, you know, playlist on the way into work and stuff like that.
There's going to be people that are going to love it. Obviously, you know, having – it's like with cable television, you have 16,000 channels and – most of the time, nothing on, but, you know.
But again, with technology, it removes the one-on-one personality.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's going to save radios.
People love relationships. I mean, why does Dr. Phil and Oprah? Mm-hmm. I mean, because people want that. They feel like I'm turning on a friend, you know.
And,
I want to give a shout out to Bill Handel on KFI in the morning out here. many of my friends, you know, if it wasn't for him in the morning, the mornings wouldn't be as much fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, it's interesting with the both of you, though. One of the things that, you know, I'm a tech junkie. I love it all. I got to buy the latest, greatest.
Right.
But one of the things that I'm starting, I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older or the technology is progressing, I'm kind of getting a little overloaded by everybody yelling at me in so many ways. But the moment I'm on the internet with a computer, everyone's biting for my attention. We were talking about record labels. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's like, how do you communicate with people without bothering them? You know, you can do iPods. Oh, hey, let me look at all the things I can download.
Yeah.
Okay, there's 10,000 of them.
Right.
I can't go through 10,000 of them. I just want what I want.
Right.
So now all of a sudden, to try to weed out through all the information, I mean, how hard is it just trying to read emails these days?
Right.
You know, just get through the junk.
Yeah.
You know, who's this? I don't know, you know. I'm your friend. You know?
Rolex is for $49.
Yeah.
You get like 100 of those emails a day.
So, you know, that's where, I mean, as a record label or even as a DJ, you know, and you have all these, you know, we're talking about like downloading iPods, which one? I mean, it's almost just gotten to the point where, you know, sometimes I'll sit, if I have free time, which is rare, and I'll start listening to artists I've never heard before and go, that's kind of cool. But in some ways, I do see a void that everybody is – it's like a giant – going to a city with giant neon lights, where now all of a sudden used to be things stood out. Now it's just noise, visual, audio, just noise. So the question now is, how do you help the consumer get through that noise?
Well, I think, again, that comes back to the quality of music that's being done. I mean, a great song is a great song. I mean, you can, when a PD sits in a room with his music people on Monday, we'll go through 50 records, and we'll know within the first 30 seconds whether that's a hit or not. Mm-hmm. So I think it comes back to the song and relationships.
Becoming a friend, yeah.
Becoming a friend. And I mean,
there's 10 million people in
quality.
Los Angeles you could be friends with, but mm-hmm. you're going to have a handful of people that you're drawn to because you have a – all of a sudden there's a click. And if a radio personality or a television personality becomes mm-hmm. that friend, then you're going to stay with them, you know, because mm-hmm. you can't be mm-hmm. friends with everybody. But if they – but when there's no personality, how that's been for the last, you know, several years.
But as an artist, you know you're right. It's so overwhelming, but that's where the marketing side of things comes in. And when why people sign with big record labels is because they have huge budgets to separate you and get you in front of you that you might want to see them.
It was an interesting thing here because what you're saying there, Andy, is when my record House of Stone and Light came out, it was released at first without any promotion, and of course nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And then luckily one person at the record company at Mercury said, let's send you out to all the radio stations. And of mm-hmm. course I was just thrilled because it was my first album and I was naive about mm-hmm. it. Mostly in pop, they don't go to the radio stations and talk much. Mostly they do that in country.
Right.
And I did this for a year and was so enthused about it that I got to know all the DJs, tell the stories about mm-hmm. the songs. People would know that I'd written songs that they liked in the past. Mm-hmm. And over a period of a year, the record went all the way to number one, right. slowly. And even the record company was like, good gracious me, let's just keep sending a human out
again,
to the radio
it was about
stations.
Relationship
yeah,
because
exactly.
the DJ remembered you.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
The
yeah.
story that you told totally. On the radio, the yeah. listeners remembered that.
They say, would you yes. pick up the guitar and play at 7 o'clock in the morning? And you yes. say, sure, you know, absolutely. I'm just thrilled to be here.
Instead of just another promo cut sheet that they get in
totally.
Where they have a stack of 100 of them.
And you know? I'm absolutely convinced because I stayed in touch with all the DJs and, mm-hmm. and every time you'd finished going into town, you send them a card the next day and thanks
absolutely.
For it, and then they would follow your next record. And I know they do it much better in country, but in pop it wasn't seen. And I did that for a year, and it actually proved to me that the record was played more, the radio station liked you, the people that were listening thought, oh, a human behind this song.
Well, because mm-hmm. when your CD mm-hmm. hit their table, they were like, oh, yeah, there's Martin, cool, we need to listen to that, because yeah, they yeah. knew who you were, they already had that relationship
I absolutely know that's how that record happened.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're promoting it yourself through your naive energy. Mm-hmm. You just love being there. You're talking mm-hmm. about everything. You're thrilled to be there.
Yeah.
And the label loves corporate. Having you do all the work,
oh,
too.
Absolutely.
It got to a point, and I must admit, this is a really great story, actually, that, of course, I would get the ads. And so I would actually, you know, call into my A&R department and say, I've just got the ad in Dallas. They've added me. You know, it's a parallel one station. And they'd say to me, wow, great. And then I get on their next plane and say, I've just got Nashville as well. And so it ended up that I was offered a job by EMI.
Wow.
Because they thought it was a promotion.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
They said, well, whoever's promoting the House of Stone and Light, that English bloke, we're offering more money and we're signing. I swear to
that's
God.
That's awesome.
Really?
And wow. also, that they because wow. I was through the AC department, when I called in an ad, this is politically what you were saying, Mark, I had to be careful that I didn't claim the ad because the
right.
promoters were very, the record company promoters were definitely didn't
yeah, they want to take the credit.
Totally. And you had to say, thanks for getting me there. I appreciate you for flying me in. And really, even though you weren't there, I felt you.
Right.
It was you that
oh,
did
yeah.
it. You had to be very careful.
Oh, yeah.
It got to a point where I was being guided by some of the people at the record company to say, just, you know, get the ads, but keep low-key about it, because it can
right.
also politically upset them.
Well, so it's unlike so. Anything in life when you're at work. If you're easy to get along with and people like you, you're more than likely going to have that job for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I just love what we've been talking about, the humanity of it, because I went into it naively, but just thrilled to be talking and to get my music out. And
yeah.
and people responded. And that's right. very, very real.
The
know?
Humanness side has to come back in the relationship side for radio. The
yeah.
only thing that will save local radio from the competition of satellite and all the other
things. I think after all
on.
This... When we're done, after all this talk of, you know, friendship and relationship, we need to have a serious group hug.
Okay, group hug after the
yeah.
podcast. No, but, you know, it's really interesting because in some ways, if we can save radio, you know, we can save music. We can save quality music because then you can get radio mm-hmm. to be the promotional pipeline for really good music, so we're not force-fed what, you know, what
I think it's going to come to a point with all this, like you were saying about the shock radio. It'll hit a certain point, and everybody's going to go like, well, where do we go from here? We can't go any farther with any more shock. And then they're going to come back again into the middle ground. And the middle ground will be, everybody will love that, because we'll start to find another way.
And it's already happening. It's already starting to happen. I mean, these companies that were voice tracking are now hiring on-air personalities again, which is a great thing, because they're realizing that they're losing so many listeners to satellite, to the internet, and because they were voice tracking, they're losing so much, which obviously turns into losing advertising dollars, which they don't want to do. So now they have to hire on-air personalities again to be the personality to have that relationship.
Well, it also seems like the music programming is changing too, because I know in Los Angeles there's a couple stations that their playlists have gotten really broad. I mean, you'll hear stuff from the 80s, from the 90s, you know.
Well, they have to, because I know that you on your iPod can I mean, you could put a 70s song and then an artist that you never even heard of on your iPod, and you don't need them anymore. So,
see, I've never understood that too, because to me, one of the best things about music is just listening to all kinds of music. Sure. But yet, when you go to for a long time in radio, it was so specific, and it's like, man, don't they have a CD collection?
Well, again, you have to remember that it depends on their target. But if it's a woman that's 32 that has three kids, she wants to be able to sing along while she's driving. So she's not in the mood to break a new artist. She doesn't want to listen to a new song that she's never heard of. That doesn't matter to her as a listener.
Let's call her up.
And so, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you know what? I also think, though, that, you know, one of the things that the internet has brought is, you know, we're so used to, from the 50s to the 80s and 90s, to kind of be force-fed. Here's what we're going to give you. We're going to teach you what you need to like, what you're going to need to learn, the way we want you to learn it. And based on, you know, let's say several dozen genres, you're going to fit into one of these categories, and you're just going to go down that road. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I love about the blogs and internet and all that is a certain amount of free spirit where I'm getting tired of, like, I like a certain amount of rock and classic rock and different types of stuff, but it's pretty much the same old thing. I'm going to hear, you know, and I love all the bands, but I'm going to hear Rush, I'm going to hear Floyd, I'm going to go back and forth and over. Right. And I love these people. But you know what? I'd love to hear something I haven't heard. I'd love to be exposed and grown musically in ways. I'd love to hear bands that are coming out that are really interesting on that genre that are new. I want to hear somebody's taste. So for me, I'd rather to go in on the internet or something and teach me something new. You know, that's even like when you look at news, give me new information. Mm-hmm. There are always stations that are great, and there always will be there. I remember when I first dated, and oh my God, I'm having flashbacks right now as I'm driving. Mm-hmm. But there's also something, you know, we talk, you've got a new label. I mean, it's dead to you. But all of a sudden, you may have artists that might be amazing. I'll never hear, but I want to hear them. Mm-hmm. Right. So unless I go through that 10,000 list of new artists, I'm never going to hear them unless somebody decides that I need to listen to them.
Right. But you know what?
Marketing,
But I think history has proven that that's not the way most listeners react. Most listeners, like you were saying, Andy, are just – they like what they already know. They like what's familiar. And
familiar. Mm-hmm.
You know what? Like – Scott, you were saying earlier, it's like a barrage on the radio. You're hearing the same thing over and over. You're hearing interruptions. You're being bothered by the advertisers and stuff. But the only way to get into people's consciousness is to bother them a little bit. I mean, you can bother them in a clever way that isn't so abrasive. But you have to kind of bother people. You have to kind of scratch through the surface to become something they're familiar with, even if it's something you hate. There are so many commercials on talk radio here in LA that are just abrasive, badly written, terrible commercials, but you hear them enough times and all of a sudden it's like it becomes part of your day
It's about building the brand.
But it also depends on the age group. And
that's true.
I mean
different demographics.
If you look at what's coming up, we're a little bit older, but at the same point, because I also do a lot with video games, so it's a whole different world of people that are into technologies. I'm not talking about the Britney Spears young kids. I'm talking the people that are looking for the new English bands, the people that are looking for the newer sounds. I mean, the people that were the equivalent of people that liked punk in the early days that were going for those eras, people that are desperate to hear something new, which, to be honest, rock was in the 60s, where it was all 50s music, and rock was banging its way in. And I think I don't know if I like it
all. I totally know what you're saying, but the thing is that the advertisers want to go where it's going to reach the most people, which will be the most familiar music, and the women who have the money to spend the money. So for males, it's a different thing.
But that is within the radio that exists now. You're talking about radio, but now if people want to play radio at work, they have a lot of different choices. So I'm finding it intriguing that somebody out there, like blogs, were nothing. It's the people's diaries. Now all of a sudden, all the politicians are freaked out because of a new way of communication. So now I'm just going on the music side, because you were saying in radio, it's really about talking. Music a little bit, but there's the personality. Talk radio is what people want to hear. But as musicians and artists, how does the music come back? How do we hear music? How do we get back into it? How do we not keep hearing Michael Jackson's latest?
You know what, though? There's always going to be the offices, like you talk about a typical office, they're always going to put on, you know, Kay Bland or something playing hits you've heard a billion times.
Right.
Because that's what's comfortable to people.
That's right.
And I don't think it's the biggest demographic, people who want to experiment and hear.
But you find the younger kids are no longer doing that, and that's what's happening.
Well,
because
you know
they're
what,
so technology, they're very savvy.
They're finding alternate ways.
They know more about computers than
that's
I do.
That's what I'm saying.
So how do the Britney Spears end up being number one for months on end? You know, they like that.
Yes.
People still like that prepackaged, glossy.
Absolutely.
It's the album cover. Crap. It's the album cover.
You think so?
It's the dads to take the daughters. Anyway.
Hey,
yeah, maybe.
It's the Duran Duran poster in Mike's room.
That's right. Really quick, one thing I want to talk about in radio, since this is the Audio Nowcast, I want to talk a little bit about that technology of your actual job. Like, for one thing, just from putting together the podcast, I know, you know, putting our little tags at the front, tags at the back. I'm in awe of some of the radio shows that are out there that do these things just to the second. I mean, one person will start talking, and then as soon as the weather or the traffic ends and the other one, how do they coordinate all that? I know there's probably some type of computerized
system.
It is
a computerized system. We at KLTY use Scott System, which basically is a hard drive that you download. If we have a CD that we like, we take that song, we download it onto hard drive, and it shows up as blocks on our computer screen. And we basically pre-programmed the whole 24 hours. It's just there. I actually just touch the screen to start the next song. It counts down the intro time for me. If I stop down to do a commercial break, I just touch the next commercial and it starts playing like that. And it's all computerized. It can actually run itself. I can put it on autopilot and it will actually kick off the new element by itself.
So it's not 8-track cassette anymore.
No, no more.
What about like when they're tagging live? It just seems it never fails that they're out exactly at the right time.
It depends on if it is live. Are you talking about a traffic break?
Well, I'm talking about like when they go to a traffic break or when they go to the news. It just seems like they're just like, okay, we've got 20 seconds, yada, yada, yada. You hear the theme song come up. Blah, blah, blah.
Well,
goodbye.
It's all being counted down. Yeah, they can see it on the screen like you've got 15 seconds left. So you know when you can talk up until – it's all computerized, yeah.
And it's what happens if you don't make it? You ever had any
– I've talked over things. I mean, it depends on if you forget to put in autopilot and then take it out of autopilot and put it manual. That's not a good thing if you forget to do that, because if you're talking and you leave it in autopilot and that one element ends, it'll kick off the next element. So that's happened before where you talk over music or
– Now, if you keep it in manual – and you go a little long and you kick it back to autopilot, does it make up for it? Is there any time compression or expansion or anything like that?
No, no. It is called the Scott System. You'll have to look it up online because I don't know all the, terms to
I'm
say,
just,
but it is
I'd love
cool.
to ask Andy a question. Are they still? Are you still doing live artists turning up to promote their stuff?
Sure,
and play
it depends.
And stuff?
On our particular station, we do not, but there are plenty that do. Yeah, plenty
As
of morning
live
shows.
Or is it pre-recorded?
Some of it's our station is pre-recorded just because of the nature of our station. We're a contemporary Christian station, so we cannot go live only because if someone decides they want to drop a bad word, we could get in serious trouble. So, but stations do go live. It just depends on the radio station. But our particular station does not go live on those type of deals.
But you're seeing lots of artists going out still. And
absolutely. Yeah.
Good.
Some of them, what they'll do is if the PD won't let them be on the radio, because obviously the PD's like, hey, look, our listeners decide what we're going to play, not you. So we're not going to put you on. They'll come and grill out, or we'll have a staff meeting and they'll show up and sing a few songs for just the staff.
Yeah.
But there's definitely relationship building going on for sure.
Oh,
yeah.
That's healthy.
Still going on.
Yeah.
Now, do you work, when you work in the booth or your studio, do you handle all the levels yourself?
or do
Yes,
you
I'm by myself in there. I engineer the I use a Vox Pro, which is a digital recording machine now. Remember 8-track or the tape where you have to cut and splice the interview and tape it? Now it's all done on a Vox Pro, it's called, on a Mac computer. And then I run the board. And, yeah, the Scott system, I'm there by myself taking phone calls and editing them and plugging in my voice. And
I invented it a couple years ago.
So. There you go. Love the Vox Pro. Well, that's the main thing I love there.
So you you take the phone calls in between while the songs are playing?
While the songs are playing, I'll record a call coming in and say, hey, Andy, I want to hear so-and-so, and I'm cooking dinner tonight. I'll just edit that up and make it sound the way I want to, and then I'll just play it. It will actually be pre-recorded, and then I'll put it on the radio, and it'll sound live.
So could you, like, telecommute then? Just, like, sit in your office at home
Well,
and
actually,
control it?
That is being done. I mean, you can now do your broadcast from your house. My boss doesn't want me to do that because he wants me to come into work. But, yeah, eventually I could be living here and being on the air in Dallas. So,
So you, how many times a day, or how long is your shift? 4 hours?
5 hours.
5 hours. Mm-hmm. How many times do you do your editing? That's pretty amazing.
It keeps me busy up until I do evening, so 7 to midnight is my shift. But from about 7 to 11, I'm pretty busy on the phones the whole time, just putting people and editing.
Faster than you can imagine.
That is amazing because we're over here. Scott edits movies. I edit television, and Martin does songs. Mm-hmm. And here you are. Every song, you're creating another little piece that has to be
in between
recorded,
songs.
Mm-hmm. edited, and then you're live on the air.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm in awe. That's amazing.
It's fun.
And mixed, too. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me just be in awe.
Be in awe of Andy, yes.
Mike's having a moment.
My husband's having a moment.
So do you, when you do these, when they phone in and you do your editing, and then it stays in the same system, or do you offload it to a cart or a file or everything? It's just all there.
Well, the phone call is in the Vox Pro file, which is a separate computer. And then what I do is that will come up on a separate pot on the board. And so the Scott system has two pots where my two songs are, we rotate songs on each pot. So, yeah, I had the Vox Pro on a separate computer, and that stays in a file. So I can actually rerun that same phone call a month later, and no one would ever know that it's not live. Which I like to do sometimes, because if you get in a bind and you don't have one, you can always look back. And,
because
the likelihood of someone listening to that same exact break and remembering it is very unlikely. So I recycle some of those tracks.
Wow. Mike, she is the perfect woman.
She recycles.
Exactly.
I can even recycle
those
phone
calls.
She can edit. Yeah.
Wow. True. Well, that's great. Well, thank you. Thanks, both of you, for joining us here at the Audio Podcast.
It was the most I could do, I promise.
And actually, can I interject one thing?
Sure.
I want to give a little shout-out.
Two.
Are we allowed to do shout-outs?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll do a shout-out. We actually have a special guest who's been monitoring our podcast this evening. He's visiting from the East Coast. He's my youngest first cousin. He's awake now. That's good. That wasn't true for the whole podcast.
He got his attention back.
But let me introduce everyone to Mr. Michael Leon Klinghoffer, Arbiter, 15 years old. And Mike, come to the mic for a second. Tell your parents you made it to the West Coast.
Mike,
he's been traveling across
the
country with a teen tour. Tell your parents you made it.
I made it.
He made it. Okay.
Mike, tell them how hot it was in South Dakota when you were there.
120.
And the bus broke down. We're told. We'll hear about that after the podcast.
Wow, that's great. Well, hey, you're welcome back anytime. And, as long as we're doing shout-outs, we have a guest engineer because Andrew couldn't be with us today. And I just want to thank Joe for handling all the recording.
Yeah,
Joe!
Yeah. All right. We didn't even give him anything really hard to have to, dump or edit or anything.
Not yet,
he's got to do some work later, mate.
I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to have Andy edit and mix this show.
It'll be done in 7 minutes.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, I just want to thank you guys for joining us today. And also, I just want to remind everybody, if you want to ask any questions, if you want to come down and listen to a taping, or if you want to be a guest and sit on the panel, just contact us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Well, that's a radio voice right there.
Yeah. Still not as good as Andy's. Still not as good.
Wow.
No, it's not.
That was something
else. No, I answer the phone and they go, can I speak to your father? No. All right, well, that's it, and we'll catch you guys next time. See ya.
Have
have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio.